Parshas Vayishlach. Last week I got in trouble. I said hello to Ben Tellis, but I didn't say hello to Avi Levy. So, hi Avi Levy. How are you? No, I gave Ben Tellis a shout out just now by saying I said hello to Ben Tellis. Okay. This week's Parshas Vayishlach. Let's see what we've got. Okay. This is an Inshabbos this week in Yeshiva. So you have to make sure that when you share these Divrei Torah, you share them with people that are not sitting here now. Okay. Pasuk says the following, the very, very first pasuk of the parsha, Vayishlach Yaakov malachim lefanav el Esav achiv arts asir sde edom. Yaakov sent malachim, angels, to Esav his brother. Now the truth is, the Medrash, it's unclear. The Medrash says it could be that he literally sent angels, or it could be that he sent messengers, and we're simply referring to them as angels. Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Sefer Darash Moshe asks, funny, I didn't even write it down over here. I really like that. Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Sefer Darash Moshe asks the following. He says, if it was real Malachim, why would Yaakov send them? Why would Yaakov want to go in a way which is Lamala Minateva? Why would he want to go the miracle route when he could go the regular route? Especially since we know that if a person sees a Nes Bo'olam Hazeh, he has to worry that maybe he's going to lose some in the Olam Haba. He's getting some Schar in this world. So. And on the other hand, if they are real messengers, not Malachim, then why does the Pasuk call them Malachim? Why does the Pasuk refer to them as angels? So Moshe Feinstein says, no matter how you look at it, if they were real angels, why send the angels? And if they were not real angels, why call them angels? So here Moshe Feinstein wants to suggest something that we all know and have heard probably many times in different forms, and that is the following. That a true ma'amin, a person that has real emunah, doesn't distinguish between what we would call miraculous and that which we would call natural. The natural is as miraculous as the miracles. It just happens to be that because we're accustomed to it, we don't tend to think of it as miraculous. But a person who's really shalem, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, doesn't distinguish between the two. It's all the same. I see as much of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Kriyas Yamsuf, in splitting of the sea for the Jewish people, as I do in the fact that there is a tree growing outside. Right? That too is a chiddush of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The fact that it's here now is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu miraculously wills it to be here now. Right? I think somebody once quipped that it sounds like it should have been there of Machlis, but I don't know. When you ask him, what's new? And he answers, what's new? Everything is new. The trees are new. The flowers are new. The sun in the sky is new. Everything. Mechadesh betuva b'chol yom tamid. God is doing this miracle every day. Every day he's creating again and again. But anyway, so getting back to our question, why would he send malachim as opposed to regular people? Isn't he afraid of perhaps losing his Olam Haba? No. The only people that lose their Olam Haba is those people that don't distinguish between the two. Yaakov Avinu, that had the ability, is the people that distinguish between the two as miraculous and natural. But Yaakov Avinu, for him, it was one and the same. Everything was miraculous to Kadosh Baruch Hu. There is no difference between Malachim and Shlichim. That's why the Pasuk uses them interchangeably. The mashal that the Michtam Eliyahu gives is the following. It says, let's say you went to a cemetery, and in the cemetery, you know, you would see Tchias HaMesim. You would observe Tchias HaMesim, right? What would have happened if you would describe it? Well, you put a body in the ground, it decomposed, and then out of that decomposition, it began to grow again and came out of the ground. It says, and we think, oh, that's crazy. That's, whoa. Right. It says the truth is that's ma'isim shebechol yom. That's exactly what we witness every day. You put, let's say, you just had a clementine. You take that seed, you put it in the ground. The seed decomposes, and then out of that decomposition and total, it becomes rotten, and out of that rotten seed suddenly grows a tree, and we don't think twice about it. We're like, yeah, big deal. That's what's supposed to happen. If it was just the opposite, that trees never grew and people came out of the graves all the time, we would be like, big deal. You know, big deal. You come out of the grave. That's what happened. They go in there, and then they come out 9 months later. The truth is, it's one and the same. Nature, we just happen to be accustomed to because it happens regularly. But we shouldn't allow that to happen. We shouldn't let the monotony, the routine of it, we shouldn't let that impact our ability to appreciate just how great it is. And that's what Yaakov was doing over here. Malachim, even though they were shlichim, it was as great as if he was sending malachim. And even if they were malachim, it was all the same as sending shlichim. They're one and the same. Okay. Anyway, he famously tells him in the next pasuk, Ko amar, ko temum la adani la Esav, this is what you should tell Esav, Ko amar avdecha Yaakovim lavan garti v'achar adata. I've lived with Lavan, right? I've been delayed till now, but now I'm on my way back. Okay, so it's what does it say over here, im lavan garti? Rashi says a famous idea. What's the famous idea that Rashi says, im lavan garti? Garti is the gematria of Taryag. It's literally the same letters. Right? Im lavan garti, begematria Taryag, meaning Taryag mitzvot shamarti. I've kept all 613 mitzvahs. The Sabbah in the Vardak, the Alta from the Vardak, wanted to say on this pasuk the following idea. It says, the Mishnah in Avos tells us, Kachi Darka Shel Torah, this is the way of Torah, Pas B'melach Tochel, B'mayim B'meshura Tishtei, you should be content to just eat bread with salt, to just drink water, to sleep on the ground. Right? So a lot of people interpret it as, that is the real way to learn Torah. Right, only bread and water and you know, sleep on the ground. He says, that's not what the Mishnah is telling you. That's not necessarily the way to learn Torah. But what the Mishnah is telling you, that even if you're in the situation of down to your last piece of bread, and even if you're in the situation of only having water, and your mattress is not the usual American mattress that you used to. I remember when we were in Shalvin, we had like these very, very thin paper mattresses that I'm not sure I could sleep on nowadays, but at the time I thought it was the most comfortable bed. Right, so, even if it's not all the creature comforts that you used to, nevertheless, you still have to apply yourself and learn Torah. And that's what he was telling him. Im lavan garti, even though I was very, very surrounded by potential hindrances, I was very potentially distracted by Lavan. He's constantly changing my salary back and forth. I want the white sheep, I want the dark. Even with all of that, nevertheless, I never gave up on Torah. It's during the times of difficulty that we prove what we're made of. There's a Gemara that talks about Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva very much loved Rachel. Rachel was the daughter of a very, very wealthy person whose name was Kalba Savua. You know, anyone know what Kalba Savua means? Kalba Savua means dog satiated. The Gemara says, why did they call him Kalba Savua? Because anyone that came to his house as hungry as a dog would walk out satiated. He was a tremendous machnas ochem. He had the means to do it. He was a very, very wealthy man. And he very, very much loved Torah.
Who is this?
Kalba Savua, Rachel's father. When Rachel told him, Father, I'm in love with a boy. He was thrilled. Oh my gosh, you're in love? That's great. Who is it? She says, it's your shepherd, Akiva. Shepherd Akiva? That's not good. He doesn't know any Torah. He's a total Am Haaretz. I forbid you to marry him. I want you to marry a real Talmud Chacham. She says, no, I have my heart set on him. All right. And she too originally was struggling with it. She only agreed to marry him on the condition that he goes to learn. But she says, I have my heart set on him, I'm going to marry him. And Kalba Savua said to her, if you marry him, I will cut you off from all of my possessions. You will not get a single cent from what I have. And deeply in love, that is what she did. She told her father, thank you, but I'm going to marry him anyway. And they moved out of her father's home and they lived in absolute poverty. They slept, the Gemara tells us, inside a haystack. And that was because they couldn't even afford blankets, so that was the way they used to warm their body, sleeping inside a haystack. Eliyahu Navi, the Gemara tells us, is observing this, and he feels bad. So he wants to give them a little bit of encouragement. He wants to give them a little bit of encouragement. So what does he do? He dresses up as a poor man, he appears to them as a poor man, and he comes knocking on their door, and he says to Akiva, when Akiva comes to the door, "My wife just gave birth, and we have no straw, no hay in the house, in order to warm the baby. Right? Do you have any hay that you can spare?" Akiva says, "Sure, we have hay that we can spare." And he gives them some hay, and then he turns to his wife, Rachel, and says, "Look, even though we have it hard, other people have it harder than us." And he gets encouragement from that, and that helps them keep on going. So Maizulis in the Sichas Be'avodas Hashem asks, why is it that Eliyahu HaNavi couldn't just give him a truckload of money? That would have been the easy way to solve the problem. Oh, he's upset, so just give him some money. Eliyahu HaNavi has the ability to do that. We've seen a couple of stories about Eliyahu when he gives people riches. So why did he not do that? Says the Sichas Be'avodas Hashem, the reason why he didn't want to do it is because undoubtedly, had he given Akiva money, he would have kept on learning, and he would have become very, very talented, no doubt. But he wouldn't have become the Rabbi Akiva that we know today. The reason why he became the Rabbi Akiva that we know today is precisely because he had hardships, precisely because he suffered through his life, precisely because he was able to learn under all circumstances. That's when he became, right? The famous English idiom, no pain, no gain. When you're lifting weights, you set the weights not so that you feel absolutely no resistance. If you feel no resistance, you're not accomplishing anything. You set the weights to the point where you feel resistance, and then you overcome that resistance. That is im Lavan Garti. I've had tremendous amount of resistance. I lived in the house of Lavan, and you cannot begin to imagine how difficult it is to keep mitzvahs there. And yet, Taryag Mitzvah Shamarti. I tried very hard to keep the Taryag Mitzvahs. Okay. Anyway, the Malachim come back and they tell him, "Listen, we went to Esav. He's coming towards you with 400 men." And at that point, the Pasuk tells us in Pasuk Ched, "Vayira Yaakov me'od vayetzelo." Yaakov feared, right? He was very worried and he was pained. Vayetzelo. Why was Yaakov worried? Why was he afraid? So, the Gemara tells us the reason why he was afraid is because he was afraid. It's true that I had, after, I mean, why is he afraid? He had a promise from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's going to be okay. So what are you worried about? So the Gemara says, it's true he had a promise, but there is sometimes a mitigating circumstance to undo the promise. What's the mitigating circumstance? Well, just the opposite.
Avera.
Avera. He was afraid that maybe Shema Yigrum HaChet, perhaps he has some sort of avera. But we know, ultimately, Yaakov does survive. And he does make it to Eretz Yisrael, and everything is good. Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Yerushchem. In this week's parsha, we see that he came, and he was Shalem. He was totally okay. So what does that mean about his anxiety? Do we say that his anxiety was all for naught? Was it baseless? Should he have not been worried? So Rav Tversky wanted to suggest, Rav Meir Tversky from YU says, no, absolutely not. Because of the anxiety, because he was worried, is probably precisely the reason why he was able to make it through. We tend to think that worrying is unhealthy and worrying is not good for us. But the truth is, a healthy dosage of worrying helps us deal with and be prepared for life in its fullest sense. I have a very book. It happens to be in my makom also. It's called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. Right? Moshe has it in his makom as well. Viktor Frankl was in the death camps. And he's a world famous psychologist. Okay? And he wrote, based on his experience in the in the Holocaust, in the Shoah, a little bit of mixing in of his memoirs with his beliefs in psychology. And he wrote the following. To be sure, I'm sorry that I'm reading. Man's search for meaning may arouse inner tension rather than inner equilibrium. However, precisely such tension is an indispensable prerequisite of mental health. There is nothing in the world, I venture to say, that would so effectively help one to survive even the worst conditions as the knowledge that there is meaning in one's life. There is much wisdom in the words of Nietzsche, "He who has why to live can bear almost any how." Okay, I'll get to the point in a second. I can see in these words a motto which holds true for any psychotherapy. In the Nazi concentration camps, one could have witnessed that those who knew that there was a task waiting for them to fulfill were most apt to survive. The same conclusion has since been reached by other authors of books on concentration camps, also by psychiatric investigation, etc. "As for myself," says Victor, "when I was taken to the concentration camp of Auschwitz, a manuscript of mine ready for publication was confiscated. Certainly my deep desire to write this manuscript anew helped me to survive the rigors of the camps. For instance, when in a camp in Bavaria I fell ill with typhus fever, I jotted down on little scraps of paper many notes intended to enable me to rewrite the manuscript, should I live to the day of liberation. I am sure that this reconstruction of my lost manuscripts in the dark barracks of Bavarian concentration camp assisted me in overcoming the danger of cardiovascular collapse." Here it is, the money ball. Thus it can be seen that mental health is based on a certain degree of tension, the tension between what one has already achieved and what one still ought to accomplish. Yaakov Avinu had a tension. He knew what he had achieved and still what he has to accomplish. "Maybe I have not yet fully reached my potential. Is that a bad thing?" Absolutely not. Because that worry, right? Such a tension is inherent in a human being. It is indispensable to his well-being. And that tension is what prods you and gets you to go. If you're always just going to be searching for equilibrium, "Oh, I've already accomplished, I'm done," then you have nothing to push you forward. And that is what Yaakov has over here. "Vayira Yaakov me'od," he was worried. Right, he was worried, but that's okay. It's that worry that helped him time and time again survive against all odds. Okay, the Kedushas Levi has a slightly different take on this pasuk. "Vayira Yaakov me'od v'yetzer lo." Yaakov was worried and he was pained. Says the Kedushas Levi, it's such a beautiful idea. He was worried, all right, and he was pained. Why was he pained? Says the Kedushas Levi. "Vayira Yaakov me'od," he was worried. Because he was worried, he was pained. Yaakov Avinu felt that there was a certain lack of bitachon. If I'm worried, then that means I don't fully have bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the fact that he didn't have full bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, vayetzer lo, caused him pain. "Vayira Yaakov me'od vayetzer lo." Now I just want to explain what it means to have bitachon. Bitachon, clearly, says the Chazon Ish, doesn't mean — I'm sure you guys have all heard this in your your philosophy classes. Bitachon doesn't mean standing, right, when you have some sort of crisis coming your way, and the outcome could be good or less good. Or let's just call a spade. The outcome could be good or it could be bad. Bitachon doesn't mean to believe that it's going to be good as opposed to bad. That's not bitachon. That's foolishness. You don't know what it's going to be. HaKadosh Baruch Hu may decide that it should be bad. But real bitachon is to believe that whatever is coming your way is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if you really believed that whatever is coming your way was from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you wouldn't be worried. Because you know that it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu who's pulling the strings. And that's okay. Whatever he's doing for my best. Even if it's not perceived as good. For example, you have a guy who is shipwrecked and he finds his way to an isolated island all by himself, some sort of tropical island, and he is distraught. But what can he do? He's deserted on an island. So he starts to rebuild his life and he discovers that there are certain fruits that he can eat and he's excited about that. And he begins to chop down wood and he builds for himself a log cabin. And after about 3 months of being here, he finally completes the log cabin. And one night, as he makes for himself a campfire, right, he falls asleep next to the campfire. And a little bit of the fire spills over outside of the fire ring. He wasn't skilled in fire safety. And it makes its way over to his log cabin, and it burns the log cabin. And he's terribly upset. He wakes up in the morning, and he says to himself, I don't believe it. I've worked so hard for this log cabin. That's all I had. Now I'm going to need to work another 3-4 months in order to rebuild it. This is terrible. This is horrible. I can't believe this happened. And to his amazement, as he's sitting there, beating himself up over the log cabin having burned down, fist on the floor, all upset, Why did this happen? A ship docks on his deserted island. We're here to rescue you. How did you know I was here? What do you mean, how did we know you were here? All the smoke, the fire that you sent up last night, all those signals, that's how we knew. So we came to see if anyone needs our assistance on this island. So it was perceived as bad. We're not always zocha to have this hindsight. But what is perceived as bad, you have to trust that it's good. Yaakov was upset at himself because he was worried. But if he really thought that everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is akol etzava, he wouldn't have been vayetzer. He wouldn't have been pain. He wouldn't have been worried, and then everything would have been. Because he was worried, he was pained. It means there's a chisaron in me that I'm a little bit worried, that I'm worried right now. Okay. Again on that pasuk, Vayir Yaakov Me'od. Rav Molaver asks, Rav Shmuel Molaver, he was one of the pioneer religious rabbis of the Chovevei Tzion movement. He asks, why was he worried? He just told us that he kept Taryag Mitzvahs. He's keeping Taryag Mitzvahs, what does he have to worry about? Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of him. What does Esav have in his back pocket? He doesn't have Taryag Mitzvahs. So, Rav Molaver said, it's true he doesn't have Taryag Mitzvahs, but he's got one huge trump card. His trump card is that he's been living in Eretz Yisrael for the past 21 years. And says Rav Molaver, somebody that lives in Eretz Yisrael, that is an absolute, that's an absolute credit to them that nobody can take away from them. And in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes, that has tremendous amount of schar associated with it. Even though Yaakov had Taryag Mitzvahs, he was worried about Esav's yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. Right now, think about us. Luckily, we're in Eretz Yisrael, Allah has become, and we also have mitzvahs that we're keeping. So Baruch Hashem, you can just imagine that the position that we're in is amazingly great. And we should take advantage of it. Okay. Vayvaser Yaakov levado. Yaakov was left alone. Pasuk Lamed Beis. This is the famous introduction. Perek Lamed Beis. Pasuk Kofei. The famous start of his battle with the Malach. Pasuk tells us, why was he left alone? Vayvaser Yaakov levado, says Rashi. Why was he left alone? Shachach pachim tanim v'chazar lehem. He left a couple of small jugs behind, and he went back to go get them. So it's a little bit weird. Oh yeah, I dropped a dollar back there. I'm going to run back and get it. Why would he go back for pachim tanim? A little bit odd. So the truth is, it's not so odd. Because if a person recognizes that everything that he has in his life is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then everything then becomes significant. Right? If I appreciate that everything that I have is a gift from God, then I go, it's a gift from God. How can I just leave it behind? Right? I remember a couple of years ago, my wife and I had something in the house, I don't remember what it was, and she wanted to sell it. You know, sometimes you see on the list over here, and there might be Chemish people sell things like dining room chairs and tables and cups or whatever, anything, car seats. And so she wanted to sell something that I had gotten as a gift from somebody a long time. So, Barbara, how how can you think to sell it? She's like, you haven't used it in the 15 years that we've been married. I've never once seen you use it. It's like, but it was a gift from Erica. Erica is my mom's close friend, best friend. I was like, I can't just sell it, right? So it's the same thing over here. When you appreciate that it's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you don't just leave it and say Hefker. This very much relates to Parshas Toldos that we missed. In Parshas Toldos, Yaakov steals the brachas from Esav, right? We didn't have Parshas here that week, I don't believe. So, if you look at that Parsha for a second, it's very weird, because it doesn't seem like much of a caper, much of a theft, because Esav gets the same bracha as Yaakov. Yaakov is told, Ve'iten lecha Elokim mitala shamayim mishamnei ha'aretz. God should give you from the tala shamayim, from the dew of the heavens, u'mishamnei ha'aretz, and from the fat of the land. That is what he was told. And the truth is, that's exactly the same bracha that Esav got. Esav is told, when Esav comes in and he cries and he says, don't you have a bracha for me? So he says, mishamnei ha'aretz yeh moshavecha u'mitala shamayim yal. You should get from the fat of the land and from the dew in heaven. Same bracha. So why is Esav so upset? He ultimately got the same bracha. Right. Is there really a distinction between the two brachas? So there is one small difference between the two brachas. And that is that when he was talking to Yaakov, it says, "Miten lecha ha'elokim mitala shamnaim." God should give you. When it says to Esav, he just says, you should have from the fat of the land and from the dew of the heavens. Meaning, part of the bracha to Yaakov was that you recognize that everything that you have is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you recognize that everything that you have is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a totally different existence. Everything becomes an opportunity. Right? A cucumber, we've mentioned before, becomes an opportunity for getting closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it enhances the relationship that I have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If I feel like that this was from God, it brings in me a love towards God. If anything that I have that I feel is from God enhances that love. But Esav that doesn't have that sense, doesn't have it. That's why Yaakov went way back for the Pachim Ketanim, because the bracha of his father was fully miskayim in him. His father said to him, you should recognize that everything you have from God, and he did. He recognized that everything he had from God, and that's why he went back. There's a, I think, maybe I told you guys this once. Yeah, I think I did. I told you guys about Rav Aaron Carlin and the apple.
Yeah, I definitely heard
him. Okay, just in case. We'll repeat it again. Maybe I only told it to Shana Bet. I don't know. Rav Aaron Carlin was sitting with one of his chassidim. He was eating an apple. And his chassid was sitting there, and he was eating an apple also. And the chassid was thinking to himself, what's the difference between me and the Rebbe? We're both sitting here eating apples, hanging out. What's the difference? And the Rebbe turned to him as if reading his mind, and he said to him, you know what the difference is between me and you? The chassid all freaked out, said, no, what's the difference between me and you? I'll tell you the difference. So we're both sitting here eating apples, but you were hungry for an apple. You know that you can't do the apple without making a bracha. So you made a bracha, borei pri haetz, and you ate the apple. I, on the other hand, says the Rebbe, was hungry for a bracha. But I know that I can't make a bracha unless I eat an apple. So I'm eating an apple. It goes the same way. How did they relate to it? The chassid really wanted the apple. The Rebbe really wanted the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he's using that apple as a vehicle for a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what Yaakov Avinu had also. A recognition that everything that he had was from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And by going back to get the Pachim Ktanim, he was saying, my relationship with you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is important to me. Okay. Next. Yaakov Avinu, meets Esav. And when he meets Esav, Esav has a very, very quick change of heart. Esav comes with the intention of killing Yaakov. We know it because at the beginning of the parsha says he's coming with his soldiers, he's ready to kill you. Yaakov is all nervous. And yet, right? And even as Yaakov is lining up, Right? He sees Esav coming with his 400 men. He quickly splits his camp. And he does it. He's nervous that Esav's going to kill him. And yet what happens? Vayaret Esav likrato. Esav run towards him. But rather than brandishing a sword, what does he do? Vayachabkehu. Vayipol al tzavarav. Vayishakehu. He hugs him. He falls on his neck and he cries and he kisses him. And they live happily ever after. How did this sudden change of heart happen? So here, there's just an important lesson that we should know. The pasuk tells us, "Kemaim hapanim lapanim," just like water reflects the face. Right? When you look at water, you see your face. Exactly. If you're smiling, your face smiles back at you. If you're pouting, your face pouts back at you. Kein lev ha'adam el ha'adam. So to a man's heart, to a man's heart. Which means that whatever you show a person, in turn, he'll show you back. If you treat a person with respect, if you treat him with a smile, he'll respect you back. He'll smile back at you. If you show him a sour face, if you show him a sarcasm, if you show him attitude, then he'll show that back to you. And that's what we learn over here, right? Right before it says that Esav ran towards Yaakov and he hugged him, what does it say that Yaakov did? Hu avar lifnehem, Yaakov went towards Esav, vayishtachu arza sheva pamim ad gishto ad achiv. He's bowing down and he's saying, I'm so excited to see you. I love you. I appreciate you. And that has a melting effect on Esav. And we would do well to remember that in our relationships with people as well. Sometimes a person upsets us, or he does something to anger us, and we think, oh, I got to teach him a lesson, right? I'm going to show him. And then you're right. Rather than act him in a nice way, you totally try to teach him a lesson by giving him a cold shoulder, by trying to shun him, by isolating him from everyone else, and that has no positive effect on trying to heal whatever wrong came between you guys. The way to do it is by showing him a smile and by acknowledging how great he could be and helping him, and then he'll turn to you with that same type of temperament. Okay, Yaakov comes. Last one, I guess. Yaakov comes towards Shechem. Well, I guess before we get to Shechem, I guess we won't get to Dinah today. Yaakov goes towards Sukkot. Why is that place called Sukkot? The pasuk tells us Yaakov traveled to Sukkot, built himself a house. He made Sukkot for his cattle, therefore he named the place Sukkot. Very strange pasuk. Why is it that just because he made huts for his cattle, he chose to name the place Sukkot? This is not my question. This is a question that many people ask. And one of the answers given, or my friend, I believe, says this as well. One of the answers given is that this was a chiddush. To be nice to animals was something that was foreign hitherto. Up until now, you had an animal, it slept out in the field. If it rained, it rained. If it was sunny and hot, it was sunny and hot. Whatever happened, happened. Nobody took the time to actually pay attention to an animal. Who cares? It's just an animal. Right? You have people like that. I remember when I was growing up in high school, one time, an acquaintance of mine came into school. And he says, oh, it was so much fun. Last night I went driving. It was right after he got his license. And I swerved to hit squirrels. He went out of his way to hit squirrels. I said to him, are you nuts? What kind? And I don't know, do they have squirrels in Canada? I was like, are you nuts? Why would you? First of all, it's dangerous. And second of all, that's just mean-spirited. Why would you ever want to attack squirrels? Right? So he's like, ah, come on, it was a good time. Right? But don't get me wrong, I'm no PETA advocate by any means. But a certain amount of respect for animals that we're so accustomed to was a chiddush. Yaakov was the first one to establish such a chiddush, and because, right, and it relates, by the way, to the point that we made before, that he appreciated that everything was from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and if everything is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have to take care of it. And because he had this chiddush, so he wanted people to know, he called the place Sukkot. That's one explanation of why he called the place Sukkot. Okay. There is one more explanation that Rabbi Fran gives. Rabbi Fran said the following. He said that if you look at the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, he is no slouch. The Gemara in Megillah tells us that when Yonasan ben Uziel translated the Navi, so the earth shook, and the Baskol comes out and it says, "Who's revealing my secrets to the people?" Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu was, so that's Yonasan ben Uziel. So we have to take his translation seriously. So Yonasan ben Uziel says, "Va'even lo bayit." What does a bayit mean? Beis midrash. Ulemiknehu banasukos. For him, for his kinyonim, for everything that he had, for all of his property, he didn't build a bayit, he built sukkot. The lesson to be learned over here, right, the reason why, and that's why he called it sukkot, the lesson to be learned over here, says Rabbi Friend, is the following. That we should all recognize that this world is sukkot. It's a temporary hut. But there is one thing that's permanent in this world, and that is the bayit, the Beis Medrash. He built for himself a Beis Medrash. Whatever you take with you ultimately is not going to be the kinyanim, is not going to be the gold and silver, is not going to be any of your physical possessions, it's going to be the Torah that you learn. Did we say it here? I'm not sure if we did. There's the mashal, a person that's, I definitely told this one to Shana, but a person that's about to pass away, he calls in his children, a very wealthy individual, and he calls in his children and says, "Listen, forgive me, but I've decided not to give any of my property to you. Rather than giving it to you, I decided to be buried with all my money." Right? I don't know. What if I get thirsty for a drink up in heaven? I need to have some currency. He says, "But I don't know what currency they use in Shemayim, so I'd like for you to please, after I die, go to the money changer. I want some dollars. I want some shekels. I want some German Deutschmarks. I want some pounds. I want even a Canadian dollar or two. You know, give me diamonds also." He gets to Shemaim and he says, "Okay, well, okay, heaven, great. I want in. How much does it cost? Here you go. Do you take dollars?" They're like, "No, we don't take dollars. What about German Deutschmark?" "No, we don't. Pounds? No. Shekel. You gotta take shekel. That's Israel currency. We don't take shekel either." He says, "Ah, I understand you. Market fluctuates. The diamonds. That's what you want." So he takes out his diamond wrapped in a piece of paper, and they're like, "Ah, that's what we want." And he's handing them the diamond. He says, no, not that. That piece of paper." He's like, "The piece of paper? What's that?" And he looks that the piece of paper that he wrapped the diamond in was a receipt for $36, double chai, that he gave to tzedakah. They're like, "That's currency to get in here. That's what we want." Right? So we tend to think of this world as, "Oh, these are the, you know, assets and the money. That's what's important." And no. The bayit, the real permanent, is the Torah. Everything else is sukkot. What's going to get you to Olam Haba, what's going to get you the real permanence, is the bayit, the base of Torah, the base of Midrash. All right, we'll stop here. Everyone should have a great, wonderful Shabbos. Next week.